He's Hacker.
I like a good serial killer documentary. He hasn't taken the pounding that wide receivers take.
It's just a pound job, and guys are tired towards that 4 minutes.
And he doesn't shy away from opinion.
I would be lying to you if I said I had not heard things. They're like a bad rash. You hear a lot of things. Some are true, some aren't.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Wednesday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark, 1010XL, 92.5 FM with Dylan Denmark. The Hacker, Ryan Green, with you. Glad you are with us as we are on the eve of the NCAA tournament. Yes, I know there is a terrific battle going on in Dayton, Ohio right now. We'll keep you updated on that in one moment. And by the way, there actually is a game later on, Gator fans, that you should probably at least take a sneak peek at, and that is the Colorado-Boise State game that goes on probably about an hour, a little over an hour from now, because the winner of that game plays the Florida Gators on Friday in Indianapolis at 4:30. But Grambling and Montana State, just an incredible battle here. Montana State up 14 as they fight to get into the round of 64. But the NCAA tournament in full begins tomorrow. 64 teams. I absolutely love it. I think as a sports radio host, I'm contractually obligated to give you my thoughts on who I believe is going to the Final Four, not because I know who's going, nor because I know anything about 60 of the 64 teams on this sheet, but because it's what we do in the world of sports radio. It's a rite of passage the Wednesday before the NCAA tournament.
You are fake news.
Yeah, I won't belabor the point, right? I won't go first round game by first round game because I filled this thing out in about 7.5 minutes. But I do feel fairly confident with advice that I'm going to give you, and it's because I got the same advice from Mark Wise of the ESPN family of networks, who is an absolute college basketball encyclopedia. And I will share that advice with you about this tournament in one moment. We'll also do a ton on the Jaguars and the AFC South. Tonight, Jordan DeJani, CBSSports.com, will come on not only to talk Jacksonville. Jordan's based in Nashville. He certainly has some thoughts about what the Titans did, including adding Calvin Ridley. We'll also look at Houston and Indianapolis. We will go to Gainesville later on in the program, later on in the 8 o'clock hour, as a matter of fact. Andrew Spivey of GatorCountry.com to preview Florida and Todd Golden. Again, their NCAA tournament begins on Friday at 4:30. So we're loaded. We're with you till 10 o'clock. And as always, we are certainly glad you are spending part of your Wednesday evening with us. Every night here on Hacker After Dark, we do kick it off with a big deal of the night and Dylan Denmark. Let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
I love the NCAA tournament. I love everything about the NCAA tournament. And this really, to me, goes back to fourth grade, right? I think the statute of limitations have probably passed, seeing as how that was roughly 30 years ago. But I remember being in fourth grade and having my mom write a sick note so that I could stay home and watch Thursday afternoon and Friday afternoon college basketball. I'll never forget the year 2000 where I stayed home from Wolfson. I believe it was that my sophomore year to watch a 5 seed in Florida take on a 12 seed in Butler in the middle of the afternoon. And it turns out one of the most memorable shots in Florida Gator basketball history happened with Mike Miller beating Butler, and thus Florida used that win to propel themselves all the way to a national championship game where they ultimately would lose to Michigan State. I've had heartbreak, right? Absolute heartbreak. Casey Cavalry, Gonzaga, the slipper still fits. Cavalry committed assault and battery on Brent Wright over the back like nobody's business. That was a foul then. It's a foul 26 years later. Was not called. Gonzaga wins. Absolute devastation for the Gators in 1998. The euphoria that this city had, the Gator fan base had, of winning national championships in 06 and 07. Again, the heartbreak of the Final Four run in 2000 that came up short, 94 that came up short. You know, you had the one, was it 2013, 2014, where UConn beat you twice that year. So we got a lot of history when it comes to the NCAA tournament. But I absolutely love it. It's one of my favorite events of the year. This dates back to, again, when I was in elementary school, man. Absolutely loved it. And the best part about that was, that was in Tallahassee. The teacher knew. He wasn't stupid. I'm not going to give him his name. I'd give you his name, even though he was in Tallahassee. I wasn't a really big fan of the guy 30 years ago, and I continue to not be a really big fan of him. But he knew exactly what I was doing. He just couldn't prove it, right? It's not what you know. It's what you can prove. He knew I wasn't sick. He knew I was staying home to watch the NCAA tournament, but he couldn't prove it, so I couldn't get in trouble because of it. Luckily, I don't have those problems now. I'm actually going to have a job where I get to go to Mr. Chubby's out in Fleming Island tomorrow night to hang out with you good folks out in Clay County and watch the games in real time, and I'm certainly looking forward to being out there. Having said all of that, my Final Four, let me give you the Elite Eight. And the piece of advice I'm going to give you is what Mark Wise told me on Monday night. And again, Mark Wise has forgotten more about college basketball than I'll probably ever know. The guy is an absolute encyclopedia, and that's why we love having him on Hacker After Dark. But he said, particularly this year, he does not see a lot of upsets. It's fun to pick the high seeds, right? It's fun to have a 10, 11, 12 seed make the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. That's what the tournament's all about. Cinderella, right, if you will. Mark said, no. Probably not this year. Maybe they get to the round of 32, but it's going to be a lot of chalk. In fact, he told me he didn't see anything higher than a 3 seed, meaning 1, 2, or 3 seed, making it to the Final Four. Remember, last year it was all over the place with Miami and San Diego State and Florida Atlantic. Mark does not see that this year, and I'm going to take his advice on that, and I would advise you to take his advice on that. So having said that, my Elite Eight is probably pretty boring. You know, you look at who I have right now. I have UConn, Iowa State. That would be a 1-2 battle in the Elite Eight there. I have North Carolina, Arizona. That would be a 1-2 battle in the Elite Eight there. If I got wild and crazy, I guess it's in the Duke region where I have Duke and Kentucky in what I guess would be a 3-4. And then I have Purdue and Creighton, a 1-3. So I have a 1-2, a 1-2, a 3-4, and a 1-3 in my Elite Eight. My Final Four includes 3 number ones. Give me UConn, give me North Carolina, give me Purdue, and give me Duke. My championship game, Denmark, I have Purdue and the Tar Heels of North Carolina. And at the end of the day, I finally think after the embarrassment last year, remember what happened with Virginia, right? Virginia lost to a 16 seed, and then they came back and they won the whole thing because of the just devastation and embarrassment that they had the year prior. I think you could see something very similar with Purdue. Purdue had one of the biggest upsets against them in NCAA history last year. They've clearly been one of the top teams all year long. I think Purdue, it's finally their year. They've had awful postseason runs, but I think finally that coaching staff and the Purdue Boilermakers will cut down the nets. I like them to beat North Carolina in the national championship game. Denmark, your thoughts?
Not bad. I mean, I've watched about probably 25 hours of college basketball, but I'll give you a Final Four if you're inclined to.
Well, you're putting matchsticks on the line tomorrow here in the station pool.
Yeah, I gave away.
Of course, there is no money. There's
I gave
only
away
matchsticks.
$10 to somebody's charity that I'll never see.
It's 10 matchsticks, but yes.
I got UConn. I'll probably go North Carolina. And then the other side, I like Houston, and then I like Kansas. I like the 4 seed to make it out of the Midwest. And then I have UConn winning it all.
You and I have very differing opinions on Kansas because I have them losing in round 1. So you have them going to the Final Four. I have them losing in round 1. again, I don't know very much about the Kansas Jayhawks other than I got a couple of buddies that are actually Kansas Jayhawk fans. But from what I've been told, they have injury problems, particularly in the front court. And they're playing a Samford team that can score with the best of them in the nation. Did I know that before Monday? Not necessarily, but that's why I had Mark Wise on to help me out with this stuff. So I do have Samford. I think that might be my biggest upset. They're a 13 over a 4. I don't think I have anything higher than a 13 winning in round one.
You got a 12 beating a 5?
Yeah, I got McNeese over Gonzaga. I'm drinking the Will Wade Kool-Aid with McNeese. So I actually have McNeese and Samford in the round of 32.
I like Grand Canyon.
Yeah, you know what? I like Grand Canyon, too. You know why I like Grand Canyon?
They sound big.
It's only one reason. Honestly, there's only one reason why I'm taking Grand Canyon. You know who their head coach is?
No idea.
It's Bryce Drew.
Okay.
Bryce Drew from Valparaiso, formerly of Vanderbilt, is at Grand Canyon now and has completely turned them around. And for that reason alone, because I know who the head coach is, I'm going to take Grand Canyon in round one. But again, I don't have a lot of these 12, 13 seeds going any further than the round of 32. As far as Florida goes, I have them being knocked out in the second round. Here are my thoughts on the Gators. All right, very simple. And I've said this all week long. I'll continue to say it until Friday. To me, the season has already been a success because you're back in the NCAA tournament. That has not been the case the last couple of years. Getting back in the tournament means the season cannot be considered a disappointment. Now, when you reset and you look forward, they're a 7 seed. They're playing the winner of the play-in game tonight between Colorado and Boise State. To me, Florida should win that game, even minus Micah Hanlockton. And we found out that Alex Condon, the freshman, will start in place of him. So even minus Hanlockton, I think Florida wins on Friday against either Boise State or Colorado. But to me, Denmark, you're kind of drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit if you honestly think they're going to knock off Marquette in Indianapolis. That'll be a very pro-Marquette crowd. Marquette's a 2 seed for obvious reasons. Now, Marquette also has injury problems, so Florida gets a little lucky there, but I just can't see Florida, who has struggled with good teams away from Gainesville the entire year, knocking off Marquette in the round of 32.
It'll take a big run like Florida had against Alabama, where they go on like a 17-0, 19-0 run somehow for them to beat Marquette, I think. I mean, other than that, it might be a close game, but Marquette, I think, is just better than Florida.
Do you agree? Season's already good. If you lose on Friday, from a tournament perspective, it would be disappointing. A win on Friday, which they should win, anything else is gravy after that?
Yeah, if you win Friday, it's a good year. It's a fine year, like I said the other day. I mean, I've always kind of said that, you know, the regular season doesn't really matter. The only thing what matters is what happens in March. I kind of changed the way Florida's played down the stretch in the last month of the regular season. But, yeah, I mean, especially you don't know what the injuries Mike is going to have to your team for the tournament. But you win Friday, it's a good year for Florida.
Again, the thing with Hanlockton, he's not a scorer, right? He did not score a lot of points. What he did was he was one of the best offensive rebounders in the SEC, and he's a 7-foot-1 body that obstructed a lot of shots on defense. So you lose that. They still got 3 bigs. They still got 3 guys 6'9 or taller in Howell, Condon, and Samuel. So barring big foul trouble, they'll be okay size-wise, but you do lose that rebounding presence and that defensive presence with Hanlockton not being in there. Having said that, again, win on Friday, I believe they will, regardless of who they play, and then I would expect Marquette to knock them out in the round of 32. We'll get some answers tomorrow. It begins at high noon and goes for 12 hours. And again, like Ballou said, we'll all be out at Mr. Chubby's in Fleming Island. Ballou will be out there 6 to 8. I'll be out there 8 to 10. Clay County, come on out and join us. Should be a heck of a lot of fun. More on the NCAA tournament coming up in a bit. To the National Football League. You know, we spend so much time on Jacksonville. Obviously, we're the home of the Jaguars, 1010XL. And I want to talk about the Jaguars and the moves that they made. I want to get a perspective from Jordan DeJani, a CBS Sports national writer, on what Jacksonville did. But Jordan lives in Nashville. I also want to talk about Calvin Ridley in Tennessee. I want to take a look at Houston. I want to take a look at Indianapolis. How did the AFC South change? in the last 10 days. We'll talk about it next. Jordan DeGianni, CBSSports.com, is next. Hacker After Dark on a Wednesday night in Jacksonville, Florida. And we're glad you're with us. It's 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Boy, free agency was very active in the AFC South, particularly right here in Jacksonville, as the Jaguars added, what, 8 or 9 guys that will be on the 53-man roster, and that doesn't even take into account who they're going to add coming up in the NFL draft in a little over a month. Let's review everything that's transpired over the last couple of weeks with my buddy Jordan DeGianni, CBSSports.com. He does a terrific job covering the National Football League, and he's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Jordan, how you doing?
Ryan, my man, what's going on? Appreciate you having me on the show. I am excited to break down what was a very dramatic free agency period in the NFL.
Yeah, Jordan, it was very dramatic here in Jacksonville. We'll kind of get to individual guys in a moment. But as a whole, guys that were released, guys that left, guys that came in, how would you assess what the Jaguars were able to accomplish?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was solid. Obviously, losing Calvin Ridley was probably the headline. Bringing in a guy like Gabe Davis is intriguing, but he's not someone who can replace Calvin Ridley. I think the bottom line that people need to remember is that the job's not done. Not only is free agency not over, but we also have the NFL draft to look forward to. And that's the spot where real contenders are built. So whether you feel great about the Jaguars free agency, whether you feel terribly about the Jaguars free agency, the job's not done just yet.
Jordan, general manager Trent Baalke about a month ago said he wanted to get stronger. He wanted to get better on the lines of scrimmage. And two of the guys they brought in, you think could help them accomplish that. Now, two veterans, right? They're not long-term answers. But getting Mitch Morse to be the brand-new center here in Jacksonville and then making a pretty big splash with Arik Armstead from San Francisco. What was your opinion on both guys?
I like both. I really especially like Mitch Morse. When Buffalo decided to cut ties with him, since I reside in Nashville, Mitch Morse is someone I wanted the Titans to go after, to have that veteran presence on the offensive line. We know that Tennessee's offensive line was trash last year. So Morse was a guy I really wanted, and I was a little jealous when Jacksonville stole him away, even though the Titans did get Lloyd Cushenberry. That's a whole thing we can address later. So Mitch Morse, in my opinion, was a really good signing to beef up the interior offensive line. As for Arik Armstead, I mean, he's a proven guy on the defensive front. And as you mentioned, the Jaguars really wanted to add to that defensive interior to stop the run. And he's someone who's going to free up pass rushers as well. So he's a proven commodity, in my opinion. I'm sure that Arik Armstead is someone that Jacksonville targeted early in free agency.
And look, Calais Campbell is one of the best free agents the Jaguars ever brought in here, and he was only here for 3 years. And if Arik Armstead 3 years from now is even close to in the conversation of Calais Campbell, that'll be a great accomplishment. But there are similarities, right? I mean, 9 years in the NFC West, team captain, interior defensive lineman, Walter Payton, man of the year, nominee. I mean, you look at all the peripheral stuff, and you kind of see some similarities when Campbell came to Jacksonville in 2017 and now Armstead coming in 2024.
Hey, that's a great point by you. I didn't really put all those things together, but you're absolutely right. And I mean, I really do think that fixing the interior defensive line was one of the more important things that Jacksonville had to focus on. And I think Arik Armstead is a really good run defender as well. But it's more than that. You know, as I mentioned a couple seconds ago, it's also about freeing up those pass rushers on the edge, because if you're solidified on the interior, that's going to open up things for your defense as a whole. So Arik Armstead, as I mentioned, proven commodity. He's a leader on and off the field. So I think that's a pretty good signing for the Jags.
Jordan DeGianni, CBSSports.com. Jordan, you mentioned Gabe Davis. He's not even 25 yet, right? He turns 25 next month, so it's very rare you can sign a under 25 guy with 27 career touchdown catches. So the talent is there. The playmaking ability is there. People here in Jacksonville, Jordan, are wondering, well, why does he only have 48 catches as a max? And truthfully, I don't have an answer to that other than people were saying kind of the same thing about Christian Kirk in Arizona, and then he came here and has been very good. So hopefully lightning can strike twice.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, while Gabe Davis maybe isn't Calvin Ridley, I think that Gabe Davis could be a little bit underrated. And it's all going to really hinge on how he's used in this offense. I mean, with Buffalo, he was this number two guy who was able to stretch the field, get separation in the secondary, and score those long touchdowns. But I think he can be a little more than that. I don't think his route tree is severely hindered, right? I think he's someone who can do a little more than just stretch the field on the outside. Now, I'm not saying he's a true number one wide receiver. I'm not saying that at all. But I think he's someone who can be a legitimate part of your offense, more so than he was in Buffalo, because his production was very sporadic. I mean, I enjoyed betting the over on him in yards in 2022 because he had a pretty solid campaign, and I was able to – you know, make some money off that. But I think he can make, I think he's someone who can have an elevated role with Jacksonville as long as Trevor Lawrence is able to build that rapport with him.
You look at some of the other guys, Jordan, they brought in, they release Rayshon Jenkins, they bring in Darnell Savage, they release Darius Williams, they bring in Ronald Darby. They are going to lose Jamal Agnew because they brought in Devin Duvernay from Baltimore. Anything else about any of those other signings kind of stick out to you?
I mean, I wouldn't call them upgrades. I would have rather kept Darius Williams, to be honest with you. But I will say Darnell Savage is definitely someone I wanted in the secondary for sure. I think he's a versatile piece. I think he can be a playmaker as well. But someone like Ronald Darby, for example, I think he could be a really good depth piece. But in my opinion, I think that Jacksonville still needs to make some additions in the secondary. And maybe that's what they use their first round pick on.
Mac Jones is back as Trevor's backup quarterback. The Jaguars gave up a sixth-round pick. Some people here didn't like that. My opinion was, look, if Trevor sprains his ankle in week 7, who would you rather have, Mac Jones or C.J. Beathard? Me personally, I would rather have Mac Jones. So to me, they at least upgraded the backup quarterback spot. What was your opinion on that?
One of the more fascinating additions throughout the course of free agency, and to be honest with you, there's no reason to not like this move. It's not like they're bringing Mac Jones in to compete for the starting spot. I guess you could – there's going to be people over that probably overreact to this trade, saying that, you know, they're really curious and worried about Trevor Lawrence's long-term health. I'm not going to take it that far. Like you said, I think that Jacksonville absolutely upgraded the backup quarterback position. And with Mac Jones, a lot of people are out on him, but to be honest with you, I think he's still a question mark. I mean, this guy came in as a rookie in the NFL, made the Pro Bowl as an alternate, had a good season, and then things fell apart because the Patriots continued to downgrade their offensive coaching staff, and things just spiraled out of control. I don't think Mac Jones is some kind of definitive bust just yet. I would love to take a flyer on him as a backup quarterback, get him in a solidified room with an offensive mind like Doug Peterson, working with someone like Trevor Lawrence. You know, there's some potential there for sure.
Couple of more for Jordan DeJani of CBSSports.com talking the National Football League. Jordan, you mentioned you're based in Nashville. Let's get to the Titans. And obviously Calvin Ridley. Now, what I thought was interesting, look, we kind of knew it. I mean, he alluded to this in his post-game presser when he cleaned out his locker here in Jacksonville. Money was going to be a factor. And to Tennessee's credit, they came in with a huge offer. It was really Calvin Ridley's first time in free agency. He's going to be 30 in December, and he cashed in, and I have absolutely no problem with that. But I guess what we found sort of interesting is he basically alluded to that right up in Nashville at his introductory press conference. He said that he would have liked to remain with Jacksonville, and he did talk about DeAndre Hopkins. He said some nice things about the Titans, but he said the money was good. So do you see this as a cash grab for Ridley heading to Nashville?
Calvin Ridley, 4 years, $92 million. That's the third largest offensive free agent contract that was handed out this cycle. And it also includes the third most total guaranteed money as well. And, you know, with Calvin Ridley, I mean, he's a versatile chess piece for sure. He can do a lot of things on offense. He can line up in a lot of different spots. He's clearly rejuvenated by this move, right? He brought it up in his press conference. He says, in reality, he's 25 years old, not 29 years old. But, you know, speaking of Jacksonville, I kind of found his comments about leaving a bit interesting. He said a lot, but something that stood out to me was that being treated like a grown man was an attractive thing for him. So that leads me to wonder, Ryan, were you guys not treating him like a grown man in Jacksonville? That's something that kind of stuck out to me. But the bottom line is that it came down to the dollars and cents. And Tennessee, in my opinion, was that team offering him the most money to join them in free agency. And that's why he's going to be on the other side of the AFC South.
Had to be bittersweet for Titan fans. They lose Derrick Henry to Baltimore, but they have added some nice pieces, including, you mentioned Lloyd Cushenberry, you mentioned Calvin Ridley. I like what they've done, Jordan, but I look at that AFC, man, and even the South with the Texans and maybe the Jags with they where they are. Can Tennessee compete in 2024? What's your thought there?
Yeah, I think they can compete, but I think it's probably more favored that they're going to be, again, the number four team in the AFC South. It's exciting what they're doing offensively, right? With new head coach Brian Callahan, he's someone who knows how to be successful when it comes to developing young quarterbacks. He's someone who has an idea of what he wants his offense to be. And reading the tea leaves, looking at adding guys like Calvin Ridley, keeping DeAndre Hopkins, adding Tony Pollard, you can get really excited about the explosive potential that Tennessee's offense may have. But let's flip over to the defensive side real quick. I mean, Tennessee has additions needed to, or they need to make at all three levels. Let's call it four levels: at defensive line, at linebacker, at cornerback, at safety. So much like Jacksonville, the job is not done in Tennessee. There's still a lot of work to be done. And I think this is more of like a 2-year rebuild as opposed to a 1-year rebuild. But again, the great equalizer in football is how your quarterback develops. So that's what's really exciting about the Titans, is to see how Will Levis is going to fare in year two with an offensive minded play caller.
What were your thoughts on Danielle Hunter and Joe Mixon to the Texans?
Well, Danielle Hunter got the bag. I mean, basically a fully guaranteed contract to go over to Houston. And it's kind of funny because people ask me where I thought Danielle would land. And I looked at Houston as a potential landing spot just because of the financial resources they had. And on top of that, they needed to find a solidified edge presence that could apply pressure on the quarterback opposite of Will Anderson Jr. So that's exactly what they did. I think Houston has done a tremendous job in free agency, to be honest with you. And then on the other side, you brought up Joe Mixon. I think that adding that element of a solidified and consistent run game could take this offense to another level. So I was wondering if Houston would go after someone like Saquon Barkley or Josh Jacobs. They ultimately trade for Joe Mixon and give him an extension. I think that's a great move as well.
As far as Indianapolis, Jordan, they kept a lot of their own, which was good, right? They kept Grover Stewart. They kept Kenny Moore. They kept Michael Pittman Jr. They added a couple of pieces, but by and large, Indy's going to run it back. What was your thought on what the Colts were able to do?
Yeah, I think it's probably for the second straight year. They haven't really done much in free agency. I think they gained a defensive lineman, Raekwon Davis. They also added reigning comeback player of the year, Joe Flacco, to back up Anthony Richardson, which was an interesting move in my opinion. They lost Gardner Minshew. They lost Zach Moss, as was to be expected. With the Colts, there's such a big question mark because it really comes down to the play of their young quarterback, and more so, can he remain healthy as well? So I think the Colts going out there in free agency and targeting relatively early a backup quarterback like Joe Flacco shows you that Shane Steichen has an eye on Anthony Richardson's health. So the Colts are going to be a really fun team to watch, in my opinion. But again, this is a team that's not done yet. We've seen a lot of smoke when it comes to the potential acquisition of Chiefs star cornerback Legarius Sneed. We don't know if trade talks have cooled or not, but Legarius Sneed could be on his way to the AFC South, whether it's Tennessee or Indianapolis. Like the Jaguars, like the Titans, I think the Colts have to keep an eye on the secondary and making additions there as well.
Final moments with Jordan DeJani, CBSSports.com. Jordan, in the time we have left, there was a quarterback carousel, man, a lot of movement. Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, Kenny Pickett. What really stood out to you about all the movement at the quarterback position?
Kirk Cousins going to the Falcons may make them the favorites in the NFC South, so I think that was a great addition. I mean, think about what this Falcons offense can be with the playmakers they have across the board with consistent or good quarterback play, so that was a big deal. I did not like the Russell Wilson addition. I'm not someone who would be in the Russell Wilson market if I was a GM of a quarterback needy team. And it's interesting because they also added Justin Fields, who I think is a quarterback who's a bit underrated. But Russell Wilson's going to be the unquestioned starter. So what did the Steelers do? Just give up a 6-round pick to create an own quarterback controversy among their fans? I think this, what the Steelers did was pretty fascinating. We don't know if Russell Wilson's going to finish out the year as a starter there. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, talk about a dramatic quarterback carousel from Mac Jones getting traded to Jacksonville, Kirk Cousins, the new starter there. We have Sam Darnold going to Minnesota. It's going to be interesting to see how some of these training camp battles progress as we get to that point in the calendar.
Hey, Jordan, final question. The team that improved themselves the most the last 2 weeks, and maybe the team that got hurt the most in the last 2 weeks?
Two teams I really like that improved, and I can't really decide between them. The Texans are one, and I already talked about some of the moves they made. So let's talk about the Detroit Lions. One of the teams that didn't have to necessarily be explosive in free agency, but I think they did a great job adding to the weaknesses, right? When it comes to DJ Reader at the middle of the defensive line, Amik Robertson at corner, they traded for Carlton Davis. Pass rusher Marcus Davenport is going to be that 4-3 defensive end who could thrive opposite of Aiden Hutchinson. Kevin Zeitler, the offensive guard, on a cheap deal as well. Now, as for the teams that did not help themselves, the Los Angeles Chargers are definitely one. We knew that Jim Harbaugh was walking into a situation where tough decisions were going to be made, trading Keenan Allen, releasing Mike Williams, Austin Eckler gone to free agency, Gerald Everett gone to free agency. So the Chargers are a team that is happy that free agency and the draft is not done just yet. I expect them to make some pretty splashy additions in the NFL draft. And then, of course, the Cowboys, right? I think I find it pretty funny that Dan Quinn has stolen at least three of their defenders, bringing them to Washington. They lose Leighton Vander Esch due to retirement. The Cowboys have not done much in free agency, and that in itself is a storyline around the NFL.
Jordan DeJani, CBSSports.com. Jordan, tell the good folks here in Jacksonville what you have coming out on the website in the coming days and weeks.
I'll tell you, I have an interesting column coming out sometime later this week looking at five storylines of NFL free agency that we should be paying more attention to. Some under-the-radar storylines for some reason are under the radar, but I think that they should be main headline news. So keep an eye out for that over at CBSSports.com.
Jordan, you're the man. I know you're busy, brother. We certainly appreciate you taking time out for us here in Jacksonville. We'll talk again soon, my friend.
Thanks so much, Ryan. Appreciate you, man.
In just a bit, Cecil Shorts, former Jaguar wide receiver, will stop by later on in the 9 o'clock hour. Coming up also in the 9 o'clock hour, we will go down to Orlando, Florida. The Orlando Magic have officially clinched a playoff spot, kinda. They're in the play-in tournament now. They're going to try to get out of that and into one of the top six seeds. But for the first time in a couple of years, there will be postseason basketball for the Orlando Magic. So we'll go down and talk to Brandon Kravitz, 96.9 in Orlando. He's also the host of the pre- and post-game on Magic Radio about the Orlando Magic, Paolo Banchero, and what they're doing down there in Central Florida. Did want to update you. We got some drama. Got some drama going on in Dayton. Grambling and Montana State. I mean, this is actually a pretty good game. They're tied at 72, 30 seconds to go and counting. Whoever wins this game advances for the right to take on, who is that? Are they taking on Purdue? They're going to take on somebody. Yeah, whoever wins this game gets Purdue. And I have Purdue winning the national championship. So odds are I don't like the chances of the team that wins this game. However, pretty nice game to kick off the NCAA tournament here as most of the action gets underway tomorrow. Again, 72 apiece, scrambling in Montana State, 15 seconds to go, timeout on the floor. The game after this is Colorado and Boise State. The winner of that game will take on Florida on Friday in Indianapolis. Speaking of the Gators, let's go to Gainesville. Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com. Let's talk Todd Golden. Let's talk what do they do about Micah Hanlockton's injury. And realistically, how far can this Gator basketball team go here in March Madness? Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com, is next. Hacker After Dark on a Wednesday, 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. Back here on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The Florida Gators are back in the NCAA tournament, a very impressive showing at the SEC tournament, winning three games in 3 days. They came up a little bit short against Auburn in the final, but Florida is a 7 seed in the tournament. They will get the winner of Boise State, Colorado, one of the play-in games in Dayton on Wednesday. Florida will get that winner at 4:30 Eastern on Friday afternoon. With that, let's head to Gainesville. My buddy Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com, always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Andrew, how you doing?
Good, man. Getting ready for some March Madness. I'm really hoping it's a good tournament this year. You know, last year just didn't seem like it had the same as usual.
No, I agree with that. It left a little bit to be desired. There were a lot of blowouts. There weren't a lot of close games, great finishes. Hopefully we get back to that this year. Andrew, I want to talk about big picture moving forward. Obviously, the Micah Hand locked an injury. We'll get to all that. But first and foremost, Todd Golden. A lot of questions about him after last year. A lot of questions about him 2 months ago. And ultimately, he ends up really turning this program around, gets a brand new contract extension. Boy, Scott Strickland looks like he hired a good one there with Todd Golden.
Yeah, you know, I think Golden's done a really good job of bringing energy back to the program with the style of play he wants to have, but he's also been able to go get players that fit his style. And, you know, that was kind of the gripe we all had when Mike White was here, was he had a style of play, and then he went out and recruited players that didn't fit his style of play, and it made an offense that looked terrible at times. And, you know, this Florida team's exciting. They're fun to watch, and, you know, one of the best offensive teams in America, and is really coming along. And, you know, I think that he's building it for the long term. He's got some young guys. You mentioned Micah a minute ago, goes down, and he's got a couple other young guys on the team. And then he's got the veterans that he brought in from the transfer portal to kind of, you know, get them going quicker. And I really think the program's going in the right direction. I think Todd Golden's a good coach to do that. And I think they got a good one. And to have that contract extension announced on Friday was big for Todd Golden as well, to kind of show, hey, we believe in you now.
Now to the team, Andrew, and I hate to start on a negative, but obviously the Micah Hanlockton injury was bad. We knew it was bad when it happened. Apparently he already had surgery, I guess, in Nashville last night. I presume he's on his way back to Gainesville already if he's not back there now. And you know, you hate it for the young man. Obviously, you hope that he comes back better than ever next year. But what does the loss of Micah Hanlockton do for this Gator basketball team when they begin the NCAA tournament on Friday?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, first off, you hope that it's a situation where he doesn't, you know, lose any steps or is good to go. From what we heard this morning, he did stay overnight in Nashville at Vanderbilt, where he had surgery last night, and he is supposed to be traveling back to Gainesville sometime today. Not sure if he already left or not, but he should be back. They did say the surgery was successful and that the doctors did tell him he'll have a full recovery. So, you know, hope and pray that that's the case, and no pain, and it's good to go. Like you said, you know, it is a loss. I mean, when you look at what he brought to the table, he was a very good defender at 7-1, and, you know, a guy that was having a really good year overall, and, you know, just was a big presence on the court as well. But, you know, the good thing for Florida is they are deep, you know, in the inside. I mean, that you have Tyrese Samuel who stepped up and had a good game against Auburn. You have Thomas Hout, who played well in that game. And so you'll look for those two. And then Alex Condon, the freshman, you know, you'll expect him to have a little bit bigger role going forward, even more so than he had. I think that's the biggest thing, is Todd Golden really did a good job of rotating those four guys a lot throughout the year. And he didn't really rely on one more than the other. Obviously, Micah and Tyrese was the starters all year, but the other guys were in there a lot. And I think that that's a big key for the Gators, is that they're not exactly starting from scratch. You're not going to ask somebody now to play 25 minutes when they've been playing 5 minutes all year. It's a big loss defensively, though, and it hurts. But I think that they'll be okay for this tournament run.
Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com, here with us on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Andrew, you mentioned there's been four bigs all year: Hanlockton and Samuel, Howell, and Condon. Now that Hanlockton's out, you move forward. Do they have another big on the roster that can give them 3 or 4 minutes, or is it a situation where Riley Kugel may have to play more in the front court? How do you think they address that?
Yeah, I think Riley Kugel's going to have to give them some more. I do. And, you know, with Riley Kugel, I mean, that he'll forever be one of those guys, kind of like a Scotty Lewis, where it's a little bit of a head scratcher, where it's like, they cannot bring the same mentality to every game. You know, Riley Kugel at times goes out and hits his shots and makes good passes. And then there's times where it's like he feels like he has to take every shot. And, you know, that's been a problem. And Todd Golden at times just doesn't trust him. But, you know, going forward into this run that they want to make, and if Florida is going to make the run that they hope to make, Riley Kugel's got to be able to come in there and make a presence. Denzel Aberdeen had a really good SEC tournament. He's going to play more as well. So I think they're going to rely more on guard play than adding a fourth big, and I think they'll go with that three-man rotation there and hope that Kugel and Aberdeen and those guys can step up and play a few more minutes and get those guys. But, you know, Todd Golden's not afraid to go, you know, 6-7 deep, and that's it. He doesn't mind Clayton and Poole and playing the majority of the game.
You know, you mentioned Hanlockton and Samuel being the starters, Condon and Howe have been coming off the bench, and that's how they've been doing it. I mean, again, we don't know. It's early in the week. The game's not till Friday, which I think helps Florida because they just played four games in 4 days. I mean, could they start Kugel at the four and keep Condon and Houck the way they've been doing, or do you expect one of those freshmen to be in the starting lineup?
I would say that they probably go ahead and start Condon. That would be my guess. Obviously, we hadn't had a chance to talk to Todd Golden yet, as they just got back from Nashville last night. I would say that they do, but, you know, I think, you know, Ryan, when you look at basketball in general, you know, I think it might depend on matchups. And, you know, when you start to look at teams and, you know, if a team is a little bit smaller, maybe you do go with four guards and then go with Samuel inside. But I would say that for Golden, he's going to majority going to go with Condon and Samuel inside and could kind of continue his starting lineup there and then have Kugel come off the bench when he plays.
Andrew, what did you think? Again, Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com. What did you think of the Gators seed? I think some people were surprised that they got a 7 seed.
Yeah, I thought it was a little disrespectful. I mean, you know, you look at this team and, you know, I mean, they had the same – or they had a better record than Alabama. They crushed Alabama two games, and in the third game in Tuscaloosa, they dominated that game for, you know, 40 minutes of the game, it seemed like, 39 minutes. And Alabama, you know, had a late run and won in overtime. But, you know, you look at that and it just kind of seemed a little disrespectful at 7. You know, you've seen different people and different bracketology. And again, it's a guess for them where some of them had them as high as a 5 seed and then to have them as a 7 seed, to just, you know, I kind of thought it was a little disrespectful. But, you know, you get the draw and, you know, Florida's got to go play. You know, that Marquette team, if they're, you know, able to get by Colorado or Boise State, whoever wins in that playing game, and you got to go play Marquette. Marquette's a good basketball team, but I think Florida can play with Marquette as well. You know, I guess the good news for Florida is they do get to play against a team on Friday who has to play on Wednesday. So maybe they're a little tired, you know, than others. And maybe that's a good thing. I just think that they should have been a 5 or a 6 seed. That would have been where I would have had them picked. But I don't know enough and obviously don't get paid enough.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I thought it was interesting that when the actual seedings came out, 1-68, South Carolina was 24, Florida was 25. Translation, South Carolina was the lowest 6 seed, Florida the highest 7 seed. And what does that mean? Well, I'll try to keep it as simple as possible. Florida could have been in South Carolina's spot. South Carolina gets Oregon in the first round and then potentially Creighton in round 2, whereas Florida plays the winner of Boise State, Colorado, and then Marquette. So from that standpoint, Andrew, I almost think South Carolina got a more raw deal than Florida, because to me, I'd rather play the winner of Boise State and Colorado than Oregon in round 1, and I almost wonder if Creighton and Marquette would be a push in round 2.
Yeah, oh, I agree. I mean, Oregon's hot right now. I mean, you know, ran through the Pac-12 and won that. You know, and they'll be fresh compared to Colorado and Boise having to play. And like you said, with Creighton and Marquette, you know, I actually might argue that Creighton might be a better matchup for Florida than Marquette. Than Creighton. You know, maybe not. Maybe I come out and I look crazy when I say that, but I just think Florida matches up better with Marquette than Creighton overall. But, and again, it's one of those things where if you're going to make a run, you got to make a run. And you know, if Florida is able to make a run and beat those two teams, you probably look at Kentucky in the Elite Eight and or the Sweet 16. And, you know, that's not a bad matchup. Florida's played well against Kentucky both times they played them. So, you know, obviously you're looking way down the road there, but Florida has opportunities. And I'll say this again, when Florida's playing basketball the way Florida can play, they can play with just about anybody in the league and in the country in general. I mean, they were very, very good against the top teams in the league, Alabama, Auburn, Kentucky. You know, Tennessee obviously blew them out earlier in the season. I would have liked to have seen them two play each other later in the year. But Florida plays really, really good basketball. They're not a bad basketball team at all. And their offense can play with anybody. You know, I say Sunday against that Auburn team, the defense of Auburn kind of got the best of Florida for a little bit, but I think a lot of that was tired legs. I mean, when Florida played Auburn earlier in the year, Florida was driving to the basket with their guards and stuff. You know, when you're playing four games in 4 days, your legs do get a little bit tired, and you don't drive as hard or as physical. So maybe that played into it a little bit. And again, I like Florida's guard play. I like Poulin and Clayton playing against anybody.
The crazy thing about what Florida did, it was three games in like 38 hours. It was insane what they did in the SEC tournament. I wonder if they'll ever look at that, you know, with the schedule. But I guess it's been like that for a long, long time. Final moments, Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com. Andrew, does the loss of Micah Hanlockton affect your expectation? Or is it still, I mean, I've been pretty gung-ho on this for a while now. Round of 32 is acceptable. You lose in round one, maybe a little disappointing. Anything after the 32 would be a success. Is that the way you see it?
Yeah, I do. You know, obviously losing Micah hurts. You know, I will say that it doesn't change my expectations or, you know, hopes much, just because they do have three other bigs. Obviously, you know, you can make the argument that Micah was the better of the defenders there. But again, I Florida's guard play is really good, and it has been really good. I think that you need to win on Friday, and I think you need to keep it close on Sunday if you're to be a success. And, you know, again, if you win Sunday, then everything after that is just absolutely a success. And, you know, again, this program's heading in the right direction. And, you know, it's kind of crazy to say that it'll be a whole new team next year, because that's what it is in college basketball nowadays. But you're building the program in the right way. And Todd Golden has now proven that when he gets the guys that fit his system, he can win and win at a high level and be one of the better overall teams and offenses in the country. And I think guys are going to be attracted to that style offense moving forward.
Final moments, Andrew. Don't get me wrong. I hope you and I are talking next week about a Sweet 16 game and maybe an Elite Eight game. But if it does end before next Monday or so, next year, I mean, Condon's back, Thomas Howell's back. You figure Hanlockton will come back healthy. We don't – I mean, obviously, the only guys scheduled to leave are Zion Pullen and Tyrese Samuel. I mean, what's your thought on Will Richard? What's your thought on Walter Clayton, on Aberdeen? I mean, could a lot of this team return next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think Aberdeen does return. I mean, and here's the thing. I mean, against A&M, I mean, he was good. He was really good. I mean, 23 points in that game. He looked really good. It wouldn't shock me at all if Will Richard didn't come back. I think in my opinion, he needs to come back, and he needs to show that he can just be consistent. You know, the joke's always on social media of, you know, are you getting good Will Richard or bad Will Richard? If you can just get consistent Will Richard, that's a really good ball player. And, you know, Walter Clayton to me is the biggest question. You know, you're starting to see him rise up some draft boards and, you know, being considered a pick. In the draft, obviously, everything I've seen has not said he's going to be a lottery pick. So that kind of hurts him a little bit. You know, maybe it's an opportunity for him to come back and, you know, get that and really polish his game. But maybe he feels like he's already accomplished everything he can. I'm not sure. I think that one is the big one. If Walter Clayton comes back next year, you've got a solid nucleus that you can really build around with another piece or two. You know, I don't expect Riley Kugel to be back. I think he'll move on either, you know, to the draft and test the waters or move on to another school. But you could really build around Clayton if he decides to come back, and especially if him and Richard come back. I think, in my opinion, it would be best for Clayton to come back. If he does, this is a team that should be a top 15 team coming out of the gates next year.
Hopefully that'll be a conversation for a couple of weeks down the road. We also know how active Todd Golden will probably be again in the transfer portal. Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com. Andrew, enjoy the ball game Friday. Hopefully you and I are having a conversation next week previewing the Sweet 16. Thank you, my friend.
Absolutely, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The NBA playoffs are right around the corner, and the Orlando Magic are squarely in the mix. They were almost guaranteed at this point a play-in spot, and right now, as it stands, they're in the fifth seed, only a game back of the four spot where the New York Knicks currently sit. Let's go to Orlando, Florida. Brandon Kravitz, you hear him every afternoon on 96.9 FM in Orlando. You also catch him as the pre- and post-game show host on Magic Radio, and he's kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Brandon, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Definitely having a lot of fun this year, to say the least.
Oh, man, as a long-suffering Orlando Magic fan, a guy that grew up in 1989 watching Scott Skiles and Anthony Bowie and Dennis Scott and Nick Anderson, I'm just on cloud nine. I mean, you're around this team a lot. You do all the Magic pre- and post-game work. I mean, what is it like down there seeing this team finally turn this corner?
It's just a better city when the Magic are successful. And unfortunately, it's been few and far between. The last time the Magic, who right now are in the 40-win range, the last time they had 40 wins in a season, you have to go back to 2018, 2019. That was the first year they broke through after the Dwight era, which you'd have to go back beyond 10 years at this point to harken back to that when the team was making the finals. So there was a nice little seven-year drought before even making the playoffs. Then that same team made the playoffs in the COVID-shortened season. They didn't even get to 40 wins that year. The league didn't play 82 games, but still, that team, which was already peaking at average, only got worse. And then Jeff Weltman and the brain trust that run the Magic blew things up. So, yeah, I mean, this is kind of exactly what you want as a fan, where you are on the ascent. You are on the elevator to a championship. And just being along for that ride and having all the optimism and seeing people around town that see me out and want to talk Magic basketball, man, there's nothing like it. This is why we get into this business.
You know, I'll raise my hand back at the draft, the Paolo Banchero draft. I wasn't sold. I thought maybe Jabari Smith. I wasn't sold on Chet Holmgren either, so I was definitely wrong in those regards. But Paolo Banchero, I mean, you always hope you draft a dude, right, at number one. And Orlando has absolutely, Brandon, drafted a dude at number one.
Yeah, they definitely did. They've got one of those guys. I think it's a crime that he's not brought up more frequently in that who's the new face of the NBA discussion. It seems like he's often left out of that, and I'm still trying to piece together exactly why that is. I'm not saying he should be at the top of that list, but he should definitely be a name that's mentioned on the list the same way that you hear it for Victor Wembanyama and Anthony Edwards, who's dunking over people every night. You know, there's a lot of great players in the league right now, but he seems to be one of them. I go back to that draft, and I spent so much time debating to myself, to my audience, my co-hosts, is it going to be Chet or Jabari, and who fits the team better, who fits the league better? I spent so much time on those two that I must have, like, just sort of grazed past Paolo. I liked Paolo Banchero. I just didn't think he was going to be number one overall in a draft that had two guys that are near seven-footers that could shoot the way that Jabari Smith and Chet Holmgren could and can, with the defensive versatility that both of them have. Chet Holmgren is the exact type of alien player that the Magic front office loves to draft. Remember, these are the same guys that drafted Giannis. They've been going after a certain body type. So I was blown away. It wasn't like I was down on Paolo. I just didn't even have him on my radar for number one overall. But, man, it's turning out to pay dividends. He is that sort of classic wing star player in the NBA that you can build around.
Brandon Kravitz, 96.9 The Game in Orlando. You also hear him on Magic pre- and post-game on Magic Radio. And, Brandon, you look around at Franz Wagner as well. Probably, again, like Paolo, like you said, probably doesn't get the recognition. Look, I love Nick Vucevic. He's probably one of my top 10 favorite Magic players of all time. It was time for him to go. And Orlando, to say that they fleeced Chicago on that deal would be an understatement of understatements. Not only do you get Wendell Carter, and I'm not sure if Wendell Carter is completely healthy, if he's not as good as Vucevic, considering both of their ages, but you also get Franz Wagner on top of that. What a deal Orlando pulled there.
Oh, my God. That was one of the best trades, probably the best trade in Magic history when you figure – all that they pulled off, and they pulled the second first-round pick. Like, let's not forget that it wasn't just Franz and Wendell Carter. You haven't even seen what the other pick. They got the 2023 first-round pick from the Chicago Bulls in that trade as well. That turned into Jet Howard. He's in the G League right now. Who knows? Maybe that guy turns into a star in the future. The Magic are so deep right now, they don't have room for him on the active roster. So he's just in the developmental league. But this deal, as good as it was, could actually prove to be even better as time moves along.
You know, we always talk about the big three, right? Obviously, Bosh, Wade, and LeBron, and you can go on down the line. I don't know if there's ever been a big three that's all been grown in-house that are all currently 22 years old or younger. But Paolo is certainly in that for Orlando. Franz is certainly in that for Orlando. And, Brandon, I got to tell you, Jalen Suggs, I don't know what happened this offseason. Jalen Suggs is a completely different player in year three than he was his two previous seasons.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the obvious here. It's amazing what happens when you've got a brand-new contract staring you in the face. This is the classic. And I'm not saying Jalen Suggs can't be this for the rest of his career. I loved him coming out of Gonzaga. I don't know a lot of people that didn't. And this was the type of player you thought you were getting. Sometimes it takes a minute to mature, personally, professionally. But I think this has a lot to do with the fact that he realized, oh, and I've been in the NBA just kind of assuming that because I'm a top pick, I'm going to be really good at this. And he had to kind of do some soul searching. I talked to him before the season started, and he said he had some really down moments where he was questioning himself and realized that being a professional and making it to the NBA are two completely different things. And I think he felt really comfortable being drafted. He felt like he had made it, and then he started to feel like a failure. And now between that personal pride aspect and the work that he's put in to rectify that, on top of looking for an extension and him being entering year four in next season, you know, he'll be eligible for that extension. Money is a powerful motivator, and we're getting the best of Jalen Suggs here in Orlando because of it.
You know, the absolutely crazy thing about this roster, when you rattle off these names, Joe Ingles, Jonathan Isaac, Markel Fultz, Cole Anthony, Mo Wagner, Anthony Black, Goga Bitadze, none of those guys start, right? I mean, you talk about the depth on this basketball team, and maybe I'm a Magic homer here and I got the blue and black goggles on or what have you, but I don't know if there's a team in the Eastern Conference, 1 to 10 or 1 to 12, that's as deep as this Orlando team is.
No, and that's that really has been their calling card. They have one of the top five benches in terms of scoring in the NBA, and they don't really miss a beat when they switch to their second unit. And a lot of teams, even the really good ones, if they don't stagger their stars in and out, you know, a team like the Milwaukee Bucks, if at any point they take Giannis and Dame off the floor, they're dead against a team like the Magic. Now you put those guys back on and, you know, obviously things start to tilt in their favor, but that's where the Magic have the number in the regular season specifically. The Magic have the number of good teams with weak benches. Phoenix is a good example of that. And then also the advantage, a really strong advantage against bad teams. Even bad teams, I've noticed this a lot over the course of the season. bad teams that have a couple of good players. Like, think about Charlotte. You know, I like Brandon Miller, LaMelo Ball when he's healthy. If those guys show up, you're in for a dogfight. Well, then those guys go off the floor, and their backups are so bad that the Magic second unit just houses them. And then that's how you win the game. So it's an advantage against the good teams that lack depth. It's definitely an advantage against bad teams. And if you look at the record and who the Magic have been successful against, the numbers bear that out.
Final moments, Brandon Kravitz, 96.9. He's the afternoon host down in Orlando. You also get him on Magic pre- and post-game on Magic Radio. Brandon, are they a year ahead of where people thought? You know, as a diehard fan, I'll be honest there. I'm not very objective when it comes to Orlando. I love the Magic. And to me, I thought play-in possibly, you know, fight for that 7, 8, 9 seed. They're a 5 right now, a game back of a 4 and 3 games back of the 3. I mean, are they a year ahead of where people thought they would be right now?
I think that's fair. A year ahead sounds about right. I walked into the season saying the expectation is a play-in. Anything less than that would be a failure this year. So they're not far away from that. But right now, as we stand today, if they were to make the play-in, that would kind of be a disaster. So in that sense, they're a year ahead. But before I can definitively answer that, we got to see how this team performs in the playoffs. Because if they win one game and they're out in the first round, that's kind of what I expected from this team going into the year. For them to be a year ahead, they're either going to have to advance in the playoffs or push a really good team, whoever they end up with as an opponent in the first round, push them to a 7th game, kind of like the Sacramento Kings did with the Warriors last year. Something like that will have to happen. Regular season-wise, you tilt towards yes, but I'm going to kind of hold off on answering that definitively.
That's a fair point. Final question. Look, I love Orlando, Florida. It's my second home. All my family's down there. I'm a Disney geek. My wife and I and my son, we go down there all the time. I spend a lot of time in Central Florida. And what I love about the Magic and that whole area down there from Church Street, you obviously got the Amway Center. I'm a big fan of Corona's Cigar Bar down the street, Brandon. I love the libations downtown Orlando. And I love the fan base, right? This team has been awful for the better part of 15 years. And they have suffered through 60 loss seasons and 50 loss seasons. And yet that arena has been full a majority of the time. You cannot call a lot of Orlando Magic fans bandwagoners because they've been there in the down times. And now the times are good, man alive, what I expect from that home crowd down the stretch here.
Oh, yeah. The fans have been phenomenal. You could look down the years of if you think this is just Magic Homer talk, I would challenge anybody to look at NBA attendance year over year over the last, just pick like the last 8 years. And the Magic, even in their worst years, were in the middle of the pack in the NBA. For how unwatchable this team was, for them to still be putting people in that building and butts in seats was really impressive. I think it speaks to the fan base. It also speaks to how beautiful the arena is. It's one of the best basketball arenas in the country. People just like going there. It's sort of an event every night. There's a game just because of the arena itself. But yeah, I mean, the fans have been tremendous. There's a lot of support, and getting the number one overall pick a couple of years ago doesn't hurt. Drafting a NCAA tournament star in Jalen Suggs doesn't hurt. And now this team is turning it around at the right time. I used to give away a load of free tickets, Ryan. Those are drying up. I can tell you that. Those are hard to come by these days, so people are definitely excited.
I tell people in Jacksonville, it's an hour and 45 if you want to get a little ambitious on I-4 to get to Orlando. You park in that garage, you use the walkway from the garage to the arena, you do the same thing on the way out, you get back on I-4, you can be home in 2 hours. It is a great night of basketball, and it's not a far drive to Orlando for us here in Jacksonville to go experience one of the hottest teams, young teams, in the NBA. Brandon Kravitz, you get him on 96.9 in Orlando. You also hear him as well on pre- and post-game coverage on Magic Radio. Brandon, I know you're busy, brother. Thank you, as always, for the time. Let's do it again close to playoff time. We'll see where the Magic are at that point.
All right. I'm excited to break it down when we get there. Thanks, Ryan.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Boy, what a week it's been for the Jacksonville Jaguars. A lot of unknowns, a lot of questions back on Monday. We have certainly gotten a lot of answers over the last 4 days. Let's talk about all of it with a former Jacksonville Jaguar, my buddy Cecil Shorts. He joins me every week during the football season, and he's going to be with us here periodically during the offseason on Hacker After Dark. Cecil, it's been a little while, man. How are you?
I'm well, brother. Fighting through some sickness stuff, but doing well. Excited. Free agency is crazy in all aspects, so excited to be on here with you, man.
Yeah, man. It's been about a month since we last talked, since the Super Bowl, and since then a lot has transpired. The Jaguars, obviously, a brand new defensive coordinator. They released some veterans from Rayshon Jenkins to Darius Williams to Foley Fatakasi. And Cecil, they brought in a lot of guys as well, and we're going to touch upon all of it. First and foremost, though, your reaction earlier this week to Calvin Ridley leaving to go to the Tennessee Titans on a $50 million guaranteed contract.
You know, I'm happy for him to be out of football for a good amount of time, go through what he went through, and then to get that much money guaranteed. I'm happy for him. Now, from a Jaguar standpoint, I think we talked about it. I would love to have him back at a certain price, and that wasn't the price. I think that was way out of the Jaguars' zone. But it's good for him. It's good for him. Now, you did go out and get Gabe Davis, and you still have a plethora of receivers still with Christian Kirk and Zay Jones and others. So we'll see. We'll see if they try to add anybody any more in the draft, but I'm very happy for Calvin. It's just I think that price, if that's what he was looking for, was way too high to stay in Jacksonville for what we saw. Very productive year, over 1,000 yards, great year. Just to me, there's inconsistencies, right? And when you give a guy $50 million that much money, you expect a little more consistency, a little more dominance from your number one receiver. Was he good? Absolutely. But I think at that price – I just don't think Jay would have been a good fit in Jacksonville.
I don't fault him. I mean, it's a money grab to me because I'm not sure how competitive Tennessee is going to be in the next year or two, and Calvin's going to be 30 in December. But this was his one time for free agency, right? He had never been a free agent.
Yep.
He's probably not going to get another big payday like this again. Take us into the mindset of a player. You know, if a competitive team's offering you 18 a year and a non-competitive team, the average team is offering you 22. I mean, the money's going to win out every time, correct?
Man, that's hard. That's hard because it depends on that particular guy. Now, it's hard to pass up that much money. It really is. But you're going to a situation which, to me, you don't have a solidified quarterback in Tennessee. You're probably dealing with a younger guy. He has potential, but he's not solidified yet. Or do you stay here in Jacksonville or go to another organization that has a solidified quarterback in the playoff hunt, could potentially be in the Super Bowl, can be in that running, and you can make a legacy here? Like, you could really – I thought he could have been a big time – and I think you mentioned this. He could have been a – I don't want to say a legend, but he could have been a huge part, a huge person in the community because he decided to stay.
A beloved figure is how I put it.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like he could have been huge if he decided to stay. And in my opinion, the higher you get, $18 million a year, $22 million a year, that's a lot of money regardless. Now, I've never been in that situation, but for me, I kind of if I'm thinking about it, I think I would go towards, hey, I'm gonna actually win, get a chance to play for a Super Bowl and play with a good quarterback. But it's tough, man. And like you said, he's been out for a while and he's 30. He's not going to see this much money ever again from football, most likely because of his age. Right. So I can't fault him. I'm not mad at him. But I do think at that price is just too high for Jacksonville.
Former Jacksonville Jaguar wide receiver Cecil Shorts here with us on 1010XL. Cecil, you mentioned Gabe Davis. He's not even 25 years old yet. He turns 25 next month. He's already got 27 career touchdown receptions. The guy's a playmaker. 16 yards per reception is what he averaged last year. Now, his highest year ever is 48 catches, and that's certainly got some eyebrows raised here. Keep in mind, Stephon Diggs was clearly the number one target in Buffalo. But what do you make of such a young guy with that many touchdowns coming to Jacksonville?
Big, big-time talent, big-time potential, man. A lot of his targets and catches were taken away because –
of Stephon Diggs. In the beginning, he came in. He wasn't the guy. He kind of had to work his way up a little bit. But in the last 2 years, he's been exceptional as far as getting touchdowns, making big plays down the field over and over and over again. You can look at playoff games where he's making big plays. You can look at regular season games. He's making big plays. In big moments, he's showing up. And I think that's one thing I love to see about him, whether it's the Kansas City Chiefs, whether it's the playoffs, whether whatever the case may be, Gabe Davis is making plays down the field. He is a big guy. He can run. He can get some separation. And to add that to Trevor Lawrence and Christian Kirk and Evan Engram, it's going to be exciting to see. So he has tons of talent, man. And like you said, I don't think he's 20 or just under 25 or 25 years old. He is somebody that he could be special here in Jacksonville.
He was born 20 minutes up the road in Fernandina Beach. His mother went to Fernandina Beach High School, I believe, or somewhere out there. He said her first game ever was a Jaguar game. He went to UCF to college. I mean, at the press conference, Cecil, earlier this week, he said, thank God Jacksonville called, because he really wanted to come home to Florida where his family is. How much does that matter for a player? Because it seemed like Gabe Davis was pretty excited about that.
It's big time, man. It's big time. I think one of some of the hardest moments that you deal with in your career in the NFL, you need your family around you, like through the ups and the downs. And to go back home or go somewhere close to home and be close to that love, close to that care, close to people around you that knew you since you were a baby, that can see you for who you are, is huge. It's comfort, right? And it can bring the best out of a player. So I think that's huge. They can be back home closer to his family and be able to play in front of him.
Former Jaguar wide receiver Cecil Short. Cecil, the Jaguars made more signings. Two guys that aren't going to probably sell a lot of season tickets. It's not glamorous, but if you remember Trent Baalke in his press conference at the end of the year, he said we need to get tougher. We need to get more physical. So let's begin on the offensive side. Mitch Morris, a center from Buffalo, was a team captain up there. He's 32. Obviously, it's not a long-term answer, but the guy played with Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. He played with Josh Allen in Buffalo. He was a team captain for the Buffalo Bills. Boy, on the surface, Cecil, that appears to be a huge upgrade at center for the Jaguars.
Hard-nosed guy, man. And when you play for those quarterbacks, when you play with those organizations, that's a huge – you trust that particular guy. He's running the show as far as the offensive line. So the offensive line feeds off of him. He's communicating well. He's communicating at a high level. He's been in the big time playoff games. He knows what it takes to win. And when you're a captain for the Kansas City Chiefs, when you're a captain for the Buffalo Bills, that's a huge accomplishment. So even though he's 32, like you said, not a long-term answer, but he's going to be solid in the middle, man. Physical presence. He's going to make sure the offensive line is running at a high level for sure.
It looks like the offensive line, the way it stands right now, Cam Robinson, Ezra Cleveland, Mitch Morse, Brandon Sheriff, Anton Harrison. Are you okay with that, if that's the starting lineup opening day?
I'm not mad at that at all. I think Mitch is going to make a huge impact. I still think we need to run the ball more. So to add Mitch, who's a physical presence, who understands how to get the tough yards, who understands what's needed, I think it's going to be huge. I wouldn't mind a piece or two in. Enough free agency still going, but a piece or two either free agency or maybe another swing tackle in the draft, maybe a younger guy. But those five you just mentioned, I'll be okay with that.
So yesterday, Cecil, the Jaguars missed out on Calvin Ridley on Wednesday. Yesterday, they spent some of that money on Eric Armstead, a big-time defensive tackle from San Francisco. 30 years old. Again, I mean, a lot of guys Baalke signed are going into their second or third contracts. It looks like this is a win-now scenario in Jacksonville. Your reaction to Eric Armstead on his way to Duval County?
Another captain. And I'll be honest with you, what Baalke is doing, even though they may be older guys on their second or third contracts, he's bringing in winners. He's bringing in leaders. We just talked about Norris being a captain. We were talking about Eric Armstead, who was a captain, who is somebody that ingrained in his community. He reminds me of a Calais Campbell type of player, where he has a huge impact in the community. He was a leader on the team. People listen to him, and then he produces on the field. So he is a guy that's going to be stout, again, physical. That D-line in San Francisco, that was what's carrying them the last 3, 4, 5 years to the NFC Championship, to the Super Bowls. It's been that D-line, and he's been a catalyst in that front four. So he's going to make a huge impact, man. I'm excited to see him get going. But what they're doing is they're bringing in vets. They're bringing in former first rounders. They're bringing in former Pro Bowlers. They're bringing in former All Pros. They're bringing in team captains to come in and get this thing going because they know how to win. They're bringing in winners, and I love that. I love what Trent's doing so far.
Arik Armstead, what could he do, his presence in the middle, for Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker?
Again, we just talked about with Norris, but physical. Somebody's going to be able to stop the run. Somebody's going to be able to put pressure on the quarterback. He's 6'7", huge presence, long arms. He's going to be a dominant force in that middle. And then let alone, so you got some presence in the middle, getting pressure on the quarterback, be able to stop the run, and you team that up with Josh Allen. Come on, man. that's going to be scary for the opposing offenses to go against that, especially within the division, twice a year.
Couple of more for former Jaguar wide receiver Cecil Shorts. Cecil, Rayshon Jenkins and Darius Williams out in the secondary. Darnell Savage, Ronald Darby in. On the surface, maybe a little younger, maybe a little better at safety with Savage. To me, Williams and Darby, I don't really know. What I've been told is Darby fits what new defensive coordinator Ryan Nielsen wants to do a lot more than Darius Williams did.
Yeah, and I think Darby's come off one of his best years in his career. I think he's been on a few teams beforehand, and then last year he kind of really caught on and played really well. Then you look at Savage. I mean, he's a former first-round guy, if I'm not mistaken. He's a guy that's made plays in Green Bay that understands, again, how to win, understands what needs to be done. He's probably a better safety than what you had previously. But those two guys, man, just adding depth. And you're adding two guys that are confident back there that can fit the system. So I'm excited about it, man. Darby, again, if he can continue the run he had last year into this year, that confidence for a DB is so important. Like, if a defensive back is all mental. It's a huge mental game. So for him to continue to build on that from last year, it's going to be huge.
Kind of a changing of the guard. Jamal Agnew out, Devin Duvernay from Baltimore in. I didn't know a ton about him. I knew he was a former Pro Bowler. But the more people you talk to, Cecil, very good in the return game, obviously being an All-Pro and a Pro Bowler. But he might add a little more wide receiver than Agnew did. Keep in mind, Agnew was a former DB that turned into a wide receiver, and he was decent at times. Duvernay in 2022 for a couple of weeks was literally wide receiver one in Baltimore when they had some injuries. So you might get a little more wide receiver from Duvernay than what people are expecting.
I think when needed, he can be that guy. He's not a two or a three, in my opinion. He's more of a 4-5 type of guy, but he can make plays when the ball comes to him. He's a true receiver, unlike Agnew, who I think was a heck of an athlete and a darn good returner. But he's more of Devin Air, is more of a true receiver type. So he understands the concepts more. He can run better routes. And then I think where he's special, as you mentioned, is the return game. You put that ball in his hands, he can make some plays back deep. So he's definitely a depth pickup for receiver. If somebody gets hurt or he can make his plays, he'll have his jet sweeps, he'll have his certain plays in there every week. But he is somebody that can really, really help you in the return game. I know Agnew did, but when you have an All-Pro that can also be a decent receiver for you, it's high praises for him.
Cecil, as we begin to wrap up, you need a good backup quarterback in the National Football League. We saw that last year with Trevor's injury issues. Nothing against C.J. Beathard, but Mac Jones, to me, is just simply a better player. And I know the Jaguars gave up a sixth-round pick, and in a perfect world, Mac Jones won't take a snap in 2024 unless it's a blowout win for the Jaguars. But in the event that Trevor goes down, the fact that you got a former first-round pick with 46 career touchdowns, to me, you could do a lot worse for a backup quarterback than having Mac Jones.
I'm not mad at that at all. I think it was just weird, the timing of it. I think kind of threw a lot of people off. I think that was one of the first moves the Jags made, so it kind of threw a lot of people off, like, hey, what's going on? But if you look at the landscape and look at kind of the injury history of what Trevor's been dealing with, and when you can have a guy like Mac who have no pressure on him at all, actually came from a bad situation, in my opinion. I think he was dealing with a defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator at one point. it was just a mess in New England. So for him to have a fresh start, I believe he's from Jacksonville, and he can truly be a solid backup. He was once a Pro Bowler. I don't care if it was 3 years ago. But he was once a Pro Bowler, somebody else that Trent brought in that understands, hey, he has some type of pedigree behind him, right? He can come in if Trevor gets hurt, which God forbid anything happens to 16. He can come in and be solid. He can come in and be a viable backup. He can come in and possibly do some really, really good things. And I think, too, like you look at his, I think he's an asset because at some point, whether he doesn't play a game at all, and there's high praises coming from the organization. Oh, Mac Jones has been a professional. He's been awesome. He's been, just a hard worker and really helping Trevor along. That could be a trade asset for the future for you. Maybe you can get that 6th-round pick back or for a higher pick, right? So you never know what can come from that. But I think that's a solid, solid, smart pickup, and you're investing in your future.
Cecil, as we say goodbye, the Jaguars weren't the only team in the division to improve. Obviously, Houston, another former team of yours, Joe Mixon and Danielle Hunter. Now, Joe Mixon's not 25, right? He's about to be 28, yep. But I still think he's got 2 or 3 good years left. Danielle Hunter, kind of the same thing. He's going to be 30 this year, but still very good, very productive. So the Texans are throwing haymakers. The Jaguars are throwing haymakers. I think Tennessee is trying to get involved. And Indianapolis, although they didn't bring in a lot of out-of-house free agents, they kept their own, and their own was good enough to almost get in the playoffs last year. So, man, this division very quickly has become very compelling.
It has. It has. I think Houston and Jacksonville have probably made the biggest splashes. But when you're sitting in Indianapolis and you can sign guys that you know, when you sign guys that kind of earn their contract and are ready to take that next step, and when you draft a quarterback, I think he was top 5 last year, Anthony Richardson, and wasn't playing that bad. And then you bring in the Joe Flacco to help bring him along and to help teach him. And then just in case things don't work out, you can put Flacco in there, who had a great year last year. I think you're in the hunt. So I think I think 3 out of the 4 teams are serious. I wouldn't say serious. I think 3 out of 4 teams have a chance to really make some noise in the division, make it really, really tough. I'm just not sold on Jacksonville. I don't know who the heck the quarterback going to be. Not Jacksonville, Tennessee. Even though you got Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins, now you got Tony Pollard, but who is your quarterback? I'm just not sold. You can give him all the pieces you want to, but Tony Pollard is not necessarily a bell cow like Derrick Henry was, and he's not necessarily somebody I think is going to be a every down back consistent 1,000-yard rusher year after year like Derrick Henry was. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there, but this division's definitely gotten tougher on paper. Now they got to go out there and play. They got to go out there and stay healthy. But on paper, it's going to be a dogfight to see who's going to win the AFC South this year.
Former wide receiver for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Cecil Shorts, is always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Cecil, we'll do it again maybe a week or two before the draft. We'll see where the Jaguars are at that point. Really appreciate you, my friend.
Hey, anytime, RG. You take care, brother.
And thank you to my buddy Cecil Shorts, former Jaguar wide receiver, for joining us here on Hacker After Dark. You get Cecil every week during the NFL season. We'll have Cecil on periodically during the offseason. We're happy we were able to recap free agency with a former Jaguar wide receiver. Been a busy couple of weeks for the Jaguars, no question about it. You think about all the guys that they've added via trade or free agency. I mean, the list is what? Mac Jones, Eric Armstead, Darnell Savage, you got Ronald Darby, you got Devin Duvernay, you got Trevis Gibson, you got Joey Sly, Mitch Morse, Gabe Davis, just go on and on and on. They have certainly added a lot in free agency and in the draft, and trade. The draft is still over a month away. A lot of roster turnover here in Jacksonville, which is good because we obviously did not have any of that last year. And they were 9-8 in 2022, 9-8 in 2023. So they're switching things up heading into 2024. Well, that'll just about do it. It has been a very, very busy Wednesday night edition of Hacker After Dark here on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. As always, we certainly appreciate you guys for hanging out with us. We have a ton of people to thank. Again, my buddy Cecil Shorts, former Jaguar wide receiver, stop by the program. Thank you to Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com, as the Florida Gators get ready for the NCAA tournament. They will tip off on Friday against the winner of the game going on right now in Dayton between Boise State and Colorado. So whoever wins that game tonight will play Florida on Friday at about 4:30 up in Indianapolis. Also, thank you to Jordan DeGianni of CBSSports.com covering the National Football League. We always appreciate Jordan taking time out for us here on Hacker After Dark. We'll be back tomorrow night, kind of a special show on location. We're out at Mr. Chubby's, Fleming Island, for a little March Madness. That's right. Tomorrow night, come on out in the Fleming Island area. Mr. Chubby's, Baloo will be out there 6 to 8. I'll be out there 8 to 10. We hope to see you. We hope you stop by, and we hope your brackets are not busted by the time that we are on the air tomorrow night. Dylan Denmark was your producer this evening. Dylan, great job as always. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green. And again, Jacksonville, thank you for spending part of your Wednesday evening with us right here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. So for all of us here on HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Wednesday evening, and we will do it all over again tomorrow night on a Thursday, live from Mr. Chubby's in Fleming Island, beginning at 8 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.